With the focus of U.S. foreign policy pivoting to Asia and Hawaii's strategic military function, for a lot of us here, paying attention to Asia is more than just academic wonkery. In another of our Views from Here conversations, we're checking in with Ralph Casa, president of the Pacific Forum CSIS. He's just returned from Taiwan and discussions with President Ma and other key officials. Nice to see you.
Great to see you, Bethany.
For the few minutes that you're actually home before you're off and running again, you're going back to Taiwan on Friday.
Right, and Korea and Japan.
The frequent places and frequent flyer miles on your account, I don't even want to imagine. What happened this time around when you were in Taiwan recently? Is there really a coalescence of ideology? Are we really looking at a one China?
No, I don't think so. I mean, everyone has a one China policy, but everyone interprets it differently. And everyone, what they really interpret is you stay where you are and let us stay where we are. And we'll both pretend we're part of the same China and then we'll live our independent lives. I was there for the first anniversary of the East China Sea Peace Initiative, which has been President Ma's attempt to sort of insert himself into the China-Japan squabble. So it's been very interesting to see Taiwan try to play the peacemaker role after a number of years of them being called a troublemaker across the straits during the previous administration.
How well do they do in that role?
Well, they're doing well as far as their own relations with Japan are concerned. Of course, anytime the mainland sees Japan and Taiwan cooperating, it puts the worst possible spin on it and just becomes paranoid. So it doesn't make the mainland happy. But on the other hand, compared to where cross-strait relations were 10 years ago, right now they're pretty good.
Earlier this month, we had Taiwan ending sanctions against the Philippines after the issue with the fisherman who was killed. Is that a good sign?
Well, I think it's a good sign. I think we've had a happy ending. I wasn't particularly impressed with the way Taiwan went about it. And a lot of people said the Taiwanese were acting like Chinese. You know, they were sort of flexing their muscle. The Philippine action was inexcusable. I mean, there were hundreds of bullet holes in this ship. The captain was clearly murdered, and that's been the result of a joint investigation between the two sides that there'll now be criminal charges against the Philippine Coast Guard. But Taiwan really flexed its economic muscles against the Philippines. And while they can do that, while it was politically popular, Taiwan doesn't have a lot of friends in Asia, and it has to be real careful about how it treats its friends. The same holds true with how it deals with Japan over the disputed territories.
We only have you for a couple of minutes. I want to scoot on a little bit. Looking at North Korea and perhaps having families able to reunite with each other, is this a positive sign or is this spin?
Well, it's both. It's great that they've talked now about reopening Kaesong Industrial Park. The North Koreans have signed a five-point agreement that says they promise that they won't play politics with it anymore. This is sort of like getting Lucy to sign an agreement that she won't pull the football away from Charlie Brown. You know, it's nice to have that as a piece of paper. We'll see if it actually works. The real tragedy in Korea has been the divided families issue. And these are people who are 80 and 90 years old now, and they have brothers and sisters in the North or in the South. And the North sort of plays hardball with that. But it's an important issue. If they can get another round, another couple of rounds of dialogue between these people from a personal standpoint, from a human relations standpoint, it's very important.
And targeted for September, do you look at that as being a reality or just sort of probably not?
You never bet a lot of money on anything that the North Koreans promise to do, because the North Koreans are trying to now tie it to opening up Mount Kumgang, which is a resort area which brings in millions of dollars. And the South has essentially closed that since a South Korean tourist was shot to death there a couple of years ago. So, you know, will the South give on that? The South has been pretty insistent that they want some sort of assurances if they go back to the Kumgang resort area that they're not going to get people shot in the future. North Koreans would have to sort of acknowledge that they shouldn't have shot the last one. And, of course, North Koreans aren't good at acknowledging past mistakes. I wouldn't, if I was one of the divided family folks, I wouldn't pack my bags yet. But certainly the hope has been raised. That's part of the cruelty of this, is that
These people don't have a lot of time. I mean, you're talking about people who haven't seen their family members since maybe the early 50s.
Right, since 1952, whatever, 51. So, and they're all getting old, you know. So a lot of them have already died, people on the waiting list to see, and many more will be dying in the next couple of years. That's just Mother Nature. So it's really cruel to sort of hold out this hope and then pull it away. But that's what the North Koreans do. That's, you know, it's part of their leverage. Is to try to get as much as they can out of what should be a humanitarian gesture just for decent reasons.
And not necessarily just slapping on a happy face to try to look good to the rest of the world.
Right. And the Chinese have been pressuring them to sort of clean up their act, and they have to, you know, keep the Chinese, if not happy, at least stop them from being unhappy so that the oil and food and et cetera will continue to flow. So you get this, you know, sort of next month they'll be frowning again. Last month they were frowning. This month it's smiling. So, you know, it's hard to put a lot of faith in it. It's good when it happens. You know, when they're smiling, they're not biting. But, you know, they have proven that they can do both.
And you know it's going to vacillate, so not accepting that one or the other is going to be the prevailing condition. As you're going back to Taiwan in just a couple of days and be having more meetings there, in general, do we need to readjust the way those of us here in Hawaii are regarding Asia?
Well, I think so. I mean, Asia is extremely important. Asia is not China. A lot of people think of Asia and think of China as the two being interdependent, but there's an awful lot going on in Asia above and beyond China. China, I tell people, beware of the Wizard of Oz effect. You know, everyone is looking at this great big figure on the screen and nobody's looking behind, you know, seeing that they're still about 4'10", casting a big shadow. You've got Indonesia. You've still got Japan as the third largest economy in the world. South Korea is growing. Indonesia is incredibly important. So there are a lot of countries we need to be paying attention to in Asia.
And looking behind the smiles and the frowns and the changing conditions of both.
Right.
Ralph, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Look
anytime.
Forward to talking to you the next time you're home, whenever that will be at
Great.
Some future point. Thanks very much. Ralph Kosa is president of the Honolulu Bay Pacific Forum, CSIS. He's a board member of the Council on U.S.-Korean Security Studies and the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations. For 30 years, he's been a political and military affairs and national security specialist for the Asia-Pacific and Near East South Asia regions.